Hey y'all, Rob here. I just want to chime in really quickly before we jump into this episode. I have a few openings in my new executive coaching business, Trepidnaw Consulting. I work with business owners, primarily landscapers, to help them scale, systemize, and get their lives back. If you want to learn more, check out the website, robtrepidnaw.com. Thanks. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to The Adventure Cure. I'm your host, Rob Trepidnaw. This is a podcast where we will talk to true adventurers who have boldly set out to live a life of meaning instead of waiting for their lives to finally get started. So many of us have hopes, dreams, and desires that we never take action on. Perhaps you're breathing, but don't feel like you're truly alive. Maybe you're sitting on the sidelines. Here, we will have amazing conversations with adventurers, entrepreneurs, and all sorts of trailblazers who have escaped the daily grind by chasing something bigger. Perhaps they can help you take the next step to a more meaningful existence. I've got a question for you. Have you ever heard of a Christian magician? Well, neither had I until I met Taylor Hughes. I asked him if he could levitate, and he said, well, how about I cut my wife in half for you? So Taylor is far more than just a magician. As you'll listen into our conversation, I think what you'll find is that Taylor has the keys for us to bring us back to our magical, dreaming 8-year-old self. He's particularly talented at bringing us into a state of wonder. One of my favorite quotes is this: the world will not starve for want of wonders, but for want of wonder, by G.K. Chesterton. And Taylor totally gets it. The truth is, in our lives, we're often obsessed with productivity, efficiency, and moving on to the next thing. I know I am. How rarely do we stop and enjoy the beauty that's all around us? How many beautiful moments have we missed because we did not allow ourselves the margin to slow down and be present? Listen in on some of these tips, as well as some hilarious and amazing stories about stealing watches from cops and learning how to fail well. Taylor has some incredible tips on helping us to live a life with more meaning, more beauty, and more joy. All right, let's dig in. And we are live. Hello, Taylor Hughes. Welcome to the Adventure Cure podcast.
Thanks for having me, man. We've been talking about this for a minute. I'm so glad we finally are doing it.
I am so glad, too. It's really great to connect. I know you went camping. I had some things going on, and now we're both in our studios. You're looking fresh. You look great. What's all that stuff going on behind you? What are all those gears and stuff?
Oh, so those are actually old movie reels. My wife's grandfather, when he was a kid, lived in Hollywood, and Max Sennett built the very first Hollywood movie studio next door to their house. And so he became a child actor, like, unintentionally. He just was next door. He had 9 brothers and sisters. His dad knew the directors, and every day they'd line the kids up and they'd be like, hey, we need 3 kids to work in the movie today. They'd hand them over the fence. They go work in the movie. So these are a lot of his old movies and reels and just some fun. I like to keep fun family stuff around the shed quarters here.
Oh,
just to,
man,
that inspire and
that
encourage
is awesome.
Me.
Yes, it's great to have that family history. So Taylor, let's go ahead. Can you kind of introduce yourself a little bit? I mean, you wear a lot of different hats. I know you as a Christian magician. I know you as friend of Bob Goff. Can you tell us a little bit more about kind of what you're up to and kind of who you are?
Yeah. So I guess my day job is I'm a magician. I do about 130 events a year, corporate events, generally about 80% is corporate. The rest is split between theater shows and performing for nonprofits. And my whole obsession in life is just helping people chase wonder. So sometimes I do that through, you know, magic shows. Sometimes I do that through keynote talks. And now I just wrote a book called Road to Wonder that is all kind of life stories viewed through the eyes of wonder and kind of asking some questions about ordinary situations that we don't always tend to ask ourselves.
The book is wonderful. I'll say this. I wanted to read it so bad that I got it on Kindle because I wanted to make sure I had it for this conversation. And I've never read a book on Kindle in my life until this one. So
my book was the first.
I broke the mold for you.
Buddy, thank you.
And I'm loving it on Kindle. And it reads really well on there. It's a really wonderful book. So I do encourage y'all to check it out. So let's kind of dive into what the whole book's about. Like, let's just go right there. Tell me, like, we can talk about overall and then we can dive into some stories. So tell me about The Road to Wonder.
Yeah. So big picture, I mean, the tagline is finding the extra in your ordinary. I think all of us at some point in our life feel like, you know, we're meant for something more and we want to make a difference and we want to, you know, have an impact in the world, however that looks like, you know, just caring for your community or your neighborhood or doing something on a stage somewhere, whatever it looks like. But I spend so much time around people who want to do like these amazing, incredible, big things. And often I've found that it's in the little moments that we are so busy trying to get to the next thing, we miss the little moments where like amazing, incredible stuff is happening. So the book is really just going back and examining stories from my life and kind of figuring out these moments where I took things away, you know, little memorable moments where I learned a life lesson and kind of unpacking some stuff that, you know, I know those stories, but I've never really viewed them through that lens of wonder. So it's not so much just, hey, here's a bunch of stories that I have. It's more of trying to encourage people to connect with their own story and to share it with others.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems as if a big thing that you talk about in there is a lot of us just kind of blaze past these amazing things that we could really like sit in and be fascinated by, right? On our journey to something else, right? I mean, you help us to kind of slow down and to just examine, you know, the beauty of an insect, a sunset, a thing like that, because oftentimes we are so progress oriented and then we miss it. We miss so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so much of our life is spent, especially now in the age of social media, which I love social media. It's a great way to connect and stay connected to people. And at the same time, if we're not careful, we can be so busy thinking about being somewhere else, either where we want to get in life or looking at your friend who's on vacation in Hawaii and thinking, how can they afford that? You know,
sure.
Just always trying to be somewhere else, that we forget to just be present and recognize like the wonder that is all around us and the amazing things that are happening every day if we're just present for them.
I love it. Now, one of the tricks that you talk about in your book to help you stay in this kind of wondrous state is really having these appointments with your 8-year-old self, which I love. Can we talk about that?
Yeah. You know, I think when you were an 8-year-old kid, you maybe had like dreams for your life or things you wanted to do, or even just ideas of stuff that you thought was cool, but you hadn't yet learned what was not possible. Right? You hadn't yet tried and failed. And so as an 8-year-old kid, you have all the good stuff without all the negative stuff that comes along from, you know, falling down and getting beat up or trying something and having to fail or really giving your heart to someone and having that relationship not work out. And so whenever I'm faced with a situation in life where I'm just struggling, where I'm feeling like, I don't know, do I go right or do I go left? Do I make this move? Do I not? Or even just times when I'm struggling with not feeling grateful for the moment that I'm in and the experiences that I'm having, I'll sit down with my 8-year-old self and I'll kind of just, you know, you can't go back in time. We can't time travel, but this is the closest thing we can do. Like, you can go back right now and think about when you were 12 years old. You know what bands you were listening to. You know what clothes you liked. You know what you loved to do on the weekend. You know what I mean? You knew what you wanted to do when you grew up. You knew how you wanted to treat people and how you wanted people to treat you. And so whenever I'm feeling stuck as an adult and not knowing what to do, I'll just sit down and I'll kind of talk to my 8-year-old self and let my 8-year-old self tell me what he thinks about what's going on. And I'm amazed at how he always knew the right answer. You know what I mean? Like, he knew what was important. Like, right. You know, when you're a kid, like, what's important? Family and friends and having a good time and treating people well. That's it. When you're a kid, that's life. And as an adult, we kind of take all this other, you know, it becomes about all this other stuff. And I think we just got to strip that away sometimes and kind of look at it through the eyes of a child.
That's beautiful. It simplifies things. You know what this reminds me of? I think they're like the CEO of Google or somebody, I forget his name, but he recently gave a 60-second speech and he talked about 60 seconds. There's, if your life is made of 5 different balls, and so one of them is glass. Let's go back and let's see this. I think 4 of them are glass. It's family, health, friends, and soul. And one of them is rubber. And that one is your work. And so if you drop the work one, it'll bounce. The other ones all break. And it was just like this profound, I know I kind of botched it, but this idea of it's a really easy way to make decisions. So I love this thing with it, being in touch with your 8-year-old self. A lot of us get caught in these really complex situations and we don't know what to do, but make a date with your 8-year-old self. When's the last time you did that?
Not that long ago. I mean, literally probably like 4 days ago, I was like, all right, time to talk to Taylor. Time to talk to little TJ Hughes and be like, hey, buddy, Look what's going on. You know, it sounds really fun and whimsical and like I'm always in this zone. But the truth is I have to constantly like get myself back in the zone of like just seeing things the right way. You know, I got stressed this week. We came back from this amazing camping trip and all of a sudden there was like this pile of stuff, you know, and it's all like self-imposed pressure. But it's like so much work I want to do and projects that we're trying to create and things that I'm excited about. And, you know, all this stuff starts because of passion and joy and enthusiasm and like wanting to put good out in the world. And quickly it becomes this thing that you're like, oh, what am I doing? Why am I putting all this pressure on myself instead of just experiencing the journey and enjoying it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go back to magic. If we can, as we are kind of talking about the book, Timmy, tell me like how magic got started. I mean, I know I've read some of this stuff, but I want to hear it firsthand from you and have my listeners just kind of like, let's go on that journey a little bit. Tell me how it started. Didn't your parents give you a magic kit?
Yep. When I was a kid, my parents got me a magic kit and I loved it. And then my stepdad's best friend was a stand-up comedian. That was his profession. And so he was always the funny guy at the dinner table. He'd always be goofing off and like, you know, doing funny little gags and tricks with the silverware and, you know, stuff I would get in trouble for. This guy would get away with and everyone would love it. So at my 7th birthday, my mom asked him, would you come and do a show for Taylor's birthday? And he's like, I can't do stand-up comedy for 7-year-olds.
Too dirty.
So he like put together a little magic show and it wrecked me. It was so good. And at that time, I was convinced early on in life, I wanted to work in the movies. I wanted to do special effects. I thought that would be the coolest thing. And then I saw this guy sitting in my living room doing these things that looked impossible. And it was happening right in front of me. There was no editing. And I just went, I have to learn how to do this. And so I went to the local library. I found out that every library in the world has a section 793.8. That's the section in every library where they keep the magic and jokes and juggling books.
This is before Google.
Yeah. And I went and I just tore up the library. I took out every book I could get. Some of them I never took back. Like I was just desperate to like learn these secrets. And I absolutely love magic. I just think magic is such a great vehicle. Again, like talking to your 8-year-old self, magic gets us out of the moment we're in, right?
Sure.
When you see a really good magic trick and you go, I don't understand that. I didn't know that was possible. It opens you up to, okay, maybe I don't have all the answers. Maybe there are other things out there that could help me in my life and my family and my business and my relationships. And so I think constantly reminding yourself of things like magic tricks or things that you don't fully comprehend is just a great tool to kind of break you out of the mold.
I couldn't agree more. I think so many of us are grasping for certainty and I think because it feels safe. And we like this idea, this false idea of safety and control. And so what you're trying to introduce is a little bit of a ambiguity here to maybe unlock our brains to think maybe we don't have it all figured out. Is that right?
Yeah. And you know, my next project I'm working on is going to talk about the opposite of wonder. You know, the opposite of wonder is misdirection. It's tricking you into thinking something's happening that's not. And I've noticed that in life, you know, I've spent my whole life studying deception as a means of entertainment, right?
Sure.
So I've literally made a life study out of how to trick people. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do that for entertainment, it's beautiful. And when you do it for any other reason, it's tragic. And I think that you can see all throughout our lives and our society and you know, in every area of life, deception kind of comes in and convinces us that things are good for us or that things are safe that really aren't. And yeah, I just think it's good reminders for us. You know, we have instant access to every bit of knowledge because we have these phones in our pockets that, you know, can teach us anything. And we forget we don't have all the solutions. Like, we don't have it all figured out. I feel like not ignorance is bliss, but I do feel a little bit like if we can get back to not feeling like we've figured it out and mastered it, then we're going to discover some things that are pretty amazing and incredible.
I totally agree. So 7th grade, Taylor gets the exposure to the magic. The guy comes and does the show. What happens next with magic?
So there's a place in LA called the Magic Castle. It's the kind of premier magician's hangout thing. Every time I try to describe it, it's not, it doesn't sound as, it really, like, because a bunch of magicians getting together.
I think of like, look, I'm excited about it.
I think of like a nerdier version of Comic-Con, you know? There's a place, it's in the Hollywood Hills. It's absolutely amazing. It's this old Victorian house that they've turned into a nightclub. It's been around since 1963. And they've built into the side of the hill. So you look at this house on the outside and you get on the inside, and the inside's like five times bigger than what you can see on the outside. And there's just, you know, magic shows happening, and it's just like a really, really cool vibey place. Well, when I was a kid, I auditioned to be part of their, you know, junior magicians program, and I was able to get in and be a part of that. And it just totally, it was amazing. All of a sudden, this weird thing that I enjoyed that I thought no one else enjoyed, now there's like 30 of us that'll get together on a Saturday and like trade ideas and show each other tricks. And, you know, we get to go up to this like cool Victorian mansion and eat hot dogs on the weekend. Like, it was just so cool. So that was kind of my next step into it.
And then you took a little bit of a different direction professionally, correct? After that, did you get into the church world? Was that next?
Yeah, so I grew up in the church. When I was 8 years old, my parents got involved in a church that I stayed at until I was 33. I spent 13 of those years on staff at the church. And I never set out to be a minister. Like, I didn't know that was a job. I didn't realize that was something people wanted to do. I always knew I wanted to do entertainment, and I liked music. And so I thought, I'll either probably be a guitar player or I'll be a magician. Because somehow I thought those were viable careers. And then, you know, years of just kind of like volunteering, doing whatever you could to help. After a while, they were like, hey, we need someone to like run the junior high group. So I said, okay, I'll do that. And then it was like, can you run high school? Sure, I'll do that. And, you know, 13 years later, I was like overseeing birth to college and preaching every other weekend on the main stage. And it just got to a point where I realized, you know, it was never like my goal of what I wanted to do. It was really just something I did out of like feeling like that was what, you know, at the time feeling like that was what God wanted me to do. And then the church we were at, there was some drama and some things happened, and it just came clear that this was not the right place for us. Like, we needed to not be here. And so when I resigned my job there, I didn't know I was going to go into performing full time. I just knew I needed to do something else. Like, the best way, you know, I've always just said, hey, I want to just follow whatever I felt like God wanted me to do. And right now, the best way I can do that is to leave where I'm at. And so, you know, two little kids and a mortgage and a wife, and
the pressure.
Quit my job. Had no idea what I was going to do. And after, you know, about a month of sitting there watching our savings dwindle, so you start to do the math in your head and you're like, okay, I think about 6 more weeks, we're going to have to move in with one of our relatives. And then I just, I said to my wife one day, I was like, you know, I've always wanted to do entertainment full time. And I think if, you know, worst case scenario, I'll go get a job at Starbucks tomorrow. Like, I'll do whatever I got to do to take care of the family. But like, I need to try this. And so I tried it, and we're coming up on 9 years ago that happened, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
It's amazing. So let's take right that moment and kind of blow it up. So I think a lot of people who may be listening may be working a job that they don't like. They may be in a toxic environment. They may be doing something that they don't feel like they're built for, right? I think very few people are doing something professionally that they feel like is really something that they're made to do. Not necessarily their calling, maybe their calling, but something that really invigorates them and brings them to life. But there's this fear of like, oh my gosh, if I quit this job, even if I hate it, that gives me this steady paycheck, there's all this fear. Am I going to be able to provide? And this and that, especially married, kids, mortgage, right? Yeah. That's a scary place. I mean, I started the business, but I was 23 and had, you know, no real responsibilities. So what encouragement can you give to people who are kind of in that place of like, they want to do something that's really different, but it's going to be kind of dangerous?
Yeah. So I think it's all scary. I think it is. You've got this thing that's inside your heart that you feel like you're passionate about, and you actually have a skill attached to it. You know, it's not like I want to be a singer of a band and I can't sing. Not sure. That kind of thing. But I'm saying, like, you know, there's something inside you that every day you keep getting drawn toward, and you're like, you're trying to not think about it, and it keeps coming back up. That idea of quitting the guarantee for that is very scary. I think it's scarier to be in a job, whether it's in a toxic environment or just something you know you're not meant to do. I think it's scarier to just stay there forever. That terrifies me.
That's well put.
You know what I mean? Like, this idea that, like, we're safer because we're in a guaranteed paycheck. First of all, if we learn anything from COVID, if we learn anything from the 2008 market crash, there is no job security. Like, this idea of, like, just settle in and you're going to be taken care of, that doesn't exist anymore. Like, there's always going to be things that could happen. So why not? Why not do the thing that you know you're supposed to do, right? I'm not talking about being irresponsible. Again, like, if I started doing performing and it was not paying the bills, I would have a side hustle. I'd be doing something else. I would always do whatever I needed to do to take care of myself and take care of my family. So you got to be willing to work hard. But if you're going to work hard to either make someone else have their dream come true or work hard to have your dream come true and probably the thing you were put on the planet to do, why not do that? You're still doing the work. You're just working for someone else's dream.
I love it.
Sorry, I get fired up.
No, this is exactly why I want you here. This is so good. And I just think so many people are in this place. I've been in this place in my life, and I feel like I'm this guy in people's lives with my friends of, like, just do it. Just quit. Just stop. Yeah. Just. But, like, there's so much fear. And to me, and I'd like you to speak to this, it seems as if the number one fear is actually not necessarily financial failure. It's looking like a fool, right? Isn't that the biggest fear that most people, if you dig down deeply, like, it seems as if that's such a crippling fear, crippling of, like, looking like a fool, right? Mm. You don't want to be in that position. At least for me, it's like, oh, I just don't want to look like an idiot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. You worry, what's your family going to think? What are your friends going to think, you know? But then at the end of the day, are they doing it? Are the people that you're worried about their opinion? Are the people who you're worried, like, for me, the people that are out there, you know, are our friend Bob Goff, like, the people who are out there living like this every day, they're not going to be embarrassed by you doing the thing that's in your heart.
Nope.
They're going to be like, let's go. How can I help? Sure. Right. The people who are going to have an opinion about it are probably people who are in a similar situation, but they have to feel like that's crazy. Otherwise, they might do it too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's that whole Teddy Roosevelt man in the arena thing. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with that quote. You know, it's just like,
There's
just getting out there, you know,
just getting out there. And there's, you know, someone said to me once, I forget who this quote is attributed to, but it's not that people fear change. We like to think we fear change. We say, I'm not good with change. I'm worried about change. I just want things to stay the way they are. People don't fear change. They fear loss, right? Like, if I just handed you a briefcase with $10 million in it, that would change your life instantly.
Big change.
But you wouldn't be afraid of that, because that would be good change, right? If I came and, like, took something from you, That would be different. It would change your life, but it's the fear of the loss, not so much the fear of things just being different.
Sure.
And, you know, when I think about, like, I can make this move and I might lose this or that. Some stuff we need to lose, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, some of the stuff that we're carrying around as humans and the thought processes we have is just like, where did that come from? You just pick that up one day rather than, like, really, you know, figuring out for yourself what it is that you need to be doing. So anyway,
I'm with you. I'm tracking 100%. So let's continue kind of down that vein. And I got a quote from you in your book. I used to perform hoping people would say to themselves, I want to have a drink with that guy. And now my goal is them leaving like they just did. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Tell me about, like, the change in mindset of you know, you on stage and what you want people to get from it.
Yeah, I think in anything you do, whether it's live performance or running a business or, you know, spending time with your kids, I think it is, it's important to think about what do you want to leave people with, right? As a business owner, if you run let's say you run a coffee shop, you just don't want to be like, okay, how much does it cost to get the beans and how much does it cost to pay people and how much are we going to sell it for? And no, you want, what is the environment we want to create? What is the experience we want people to have? When they come in here, how are they leaving different, right? Those are the kind of things that make great businesses and great relationships and, you know, great families. It's like, are we leaving people better than when they came in? And for years as a magician, I used to just think, what tricks do I want to do? Oh, that's a really cool trick. I saw that trick and I liked it. And, you know, if I did that, people would enjoy it. And then my wife was the one who challenged me. She's like, number one, you're a storyteller, right? Like, you tell stories all the time, except for when you're on stage. And you need to put part of yourself into your show. So I stopped going like, man, I don't want to do a show where people go, hey, I'd like to learn more about that person. You know, I'd like to get to know them a little bit more. I started writing my performances and my presentations in a way that I was sharing the personal stuff and the stuff that was important to me and the stuff, the way I viewed the world and all of that. And so when I get off stage, hopefully people know me better. And when I bring someone up to help, I don't just ask them, hi, where are you from? What do you do? Like, I get to know them so that we're developing a relationship. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, so
absolutely.
I just think that's important. I think in whatever area of business you're in is like, what are you leaving people with? Like, when they walk away, yeah, maybe you did a nice job painting their house, but like, what was the experience, you know?
Right. It sounds like what you brought to it was vulnerability.
Yeah.
What was that like? Yeah, I mean, it probably felt kind of exposing and kind of foreign at first, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's good vulnerability and there's bad, right? Like, we've all had somebody dump something on us in a conversation that's like, I think
way too soon.
You should be talking to someone else about that.
Yeah, go see a counselor,
please. Maybe a professional. but there's other kind of vulnerability where it draws people in instead of pushes them away, you know? And so, as a performer, I was always afraid of being too vulnerable, because if I just do a trick that someone else came up with and I tell a joke someone else came up with and they don't laugh, well, that's not really my thing, you know?
Right.
But when it's like, hey, this is my experience, this is my story, this is the thing that I went through, you worry that like, maybe if they don't like it, that means they don't like you, you know?
Yeah.
And I think you just got to go for it anyway.
just go for it. I can imagine that the response has been positive, or you wouldn't be still doing this, right?
Yeah, I think it makes it so much better. You didn't just see a show, you know. You like my favorite comedians and entertainers. They tell stories from their life and they share experiences, and you get to see the things that, you know, maybe they're a little weird about, or, you know, like, I think that's. You know, the things we love about our friends and in our relationships is like, you know, the stuff other people don't know, you know? And I think in life, you know, again, you want to be careful. You don't want to just come out and air everything out to everyone. But I do think the quicker we can go from surface level conversations to, you know, what was the last thing you changed your mind about? Like, that's a great question I love asking people right now. Like, well, hey, what was the last time you changed your mind about something? Not like you were going to get a turkey sandwich and then instead you got, you know, tacos. But like, what was the last time you had a real belief about something and you changed it?
How about I ask that to you right now?
I was asking you.
Okay. I'll go first.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay,
yeah.
So... okay, let's just be super meta here. This is about this podcast. So
yeah,
I got this idea from Bob, from our mutual friend, Bob Goff. Bob's like, Rob, you need to start a podcast. This is something you need to do. And I was just like, what am I going to talk about? Who's going to want to listen to me? You know, how would I even begin? And Bob's like, come on, dude, I'll be your first guest. He's like, I'm offended you haven't asked me yet. He's like, I'm ready. And I'm like,
isn't it the best?
So I called up one of my best friends. And we went out and over drinks. And I said, Max, I said, what do you think about this idea? What should I do this? Like, do I have a voice? Do I have something that's worth saying? And he was like, dude, you don't have to commit to this for your life. He was like,
right.
Why don't you do like three? He's like, I'll come on.
Yes.
He's like, why don't you do like three of them? And then you can reevaluate. And I was like, oh man. And he's like, what's holding you back? And I thought about some people that I thought would maybe judge me about it. And he's like, who cares about them? And
yeah.
And like 10 minutes later, I was like,
yeah,
I'm freaking doing this. And so that, you know, that's a couple months ago. And it's not a huge life decision, but I'm a few months into this now and it's going beautifully. And so I just needed someone to speak truth to me and say, dude, just I do want to listen to you. So you got one listener. And B, you're not signing a contract in blood. And so that changed my mind. It was awesome. Yeah. You know?
Well, he was giving you the permission to fail if necessary.
Yes.
Right.
Beautiful.
And what is fail? Like, I mean, if you put out three conversations, those are three more great in-depth conversations than exist in the world. That's a win.
That's a
not
win.
A failure.
It's a win, I mean? For me personally.
But I'm saying, like,
you know,
but whatever it is we build up in our mind, like if I get this many subscribers,
sure,
or if I make this much money, or if I get this guest, then it'll be whatever. Like, I think we forget that in order to be good at anything, you have to suck at it for a while.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
Like, we look at these amazing bands, like Paul McCartney used to not know how to play instruments.
Right.
Like, he was not born with that ability. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think we're all so worried that we're going to be compared to this like top echelon of what, and it's like, no, just do something. Just take a step. And maybe it's not this podcast. Maybe it's going to be the third podcast that you launch.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it could, like, I just think, like, the less time we spend waiting to get started, the quicker we're going to get to the good stuff.
It's so true, man. We need to spend more time together.
I know, buddy. Let's go. Let's go.
This is just good stuff. Okay, so the name of the podcast is called The Adventure Cure. And so tell me, what does adventure, like, mean to you?
Oh, my goodness. I think adventure, for me, is, I mean, it's got to start with out of the ordinary, right? Like, if you're going to have an adventure, you're going to either do something or go somewhere that you've never gone or you've never done. And I don't think that means you need to like get on a plane and like go overseas somewhere. Like, I think that could literally be around the corner from your house. Like, for some people, they pull into the driveway when they get home and they pull in their garage and they shut the door. And they literally don't see their neighbors because they're never outside their house unless they're in their car driving away from their house. So maybe like an adventure could be, hey, for a month, I'm not going to park in the garage and I'm just going to see, who do I run into? What conversations do I have? You know what I'm saying? Like, or maybe you drive, you know, two blocks to get coffee every morning. Like, maybe you decide I'm going to walk. Like, that can be an adventure. Like, adventure doesn't have to be this big, huge, crazy thing. It's just doing something you haven't done, like getting outside of your routine, getting outside of yourself.
Absolutely. It sounds like this is something that you embrace very much in your life.
I try to, man. Again, these are all tricks to try to trick myself into being who I want to be. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
what do you think like is the opposite of adventure? Like, what do you think?
Ooh.
What do you think keeps? Yeah. Just what's the opposite of adventure to you? Like, what are the things that would tell you not to do those things?
Yeah, I think the opposite of adventure is mundane and comfort.
Comfort,
you know,
which a lot of people seek.
Yeah.
Which is a time and place for it. I mean, when you go on vacation, you want to be comfortable. But you also want adventure, right? You don't want to go to like this beautiful resort somewhere and just sit by the pool the whole time. What if you're in Hawaii? You know, people go to Hawaii and they just sit by the pool and it's like, did you go climb that volcano? Did you go see the whales? Did you go swim with the turtles?
Yeah.
You didn't have adventure. You could have done that in Florida, you know?
Yeah. Well, and there's moments for that. There are moments of rest and like just chill by the pool. Yeah, have a moment of that. But for me, it's like, I mean, I travel quite a bit. And the worst thing to me, the worst trips ever are when I fly somewhere, get a car, go to the hotel, drive to the venue, do the show, do it all in reverse and come home. If I fly to Oakland and I'm going to do a show and, you know, I get there in the morning, the show's that night, I will drive to San Francisco. Like, I'll drive an hour there, hour back. Like, I'll just go do something. Like, you don't have to have a plan. Just start.
Yeah. I think the plan thing holds so many people back. They think you have to have this bulletproof plan. And I've done that in parts of my life before. I mean, I'm mostly a pretty spontaneous, unplanned person. But sometimes when I want to do something that I perceive as big or public or whatever, I think I need this 12-step plan. And then I just never do it. Then I just never, you just wrote a book. I'm working on a book right now. And, there's a lot of imposter syndrome. I'm sure you're familiar with that. And it's just a lot of people think, oh my gosh, who are you to write a book? One of my best friends says, oh, Rob, you're 33 writing a memoir. How egoistic of you. And I was like, and he was like joking, kind of, but kind of not. And it sank with me for a while. I'm like, oh shoot. But then someone else told me, hey, Rob, this will be the best gift you ever give yourself. And it doesn't matter if one person reads it, but you're going to give yourself a gift by going on this journey and just do it. And it will change everything. And that is the outcome. And I was like, oh, wow, can't lose. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's so funny that we recognize it with that imposter syndrome. We recognize that we don't know how to do something, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's, I don't know how to write a book. I don't know how to start a podcast. I don't know how to launch this business. I don't know how to ask that person out. Like, whatever it is, we acknowledge we don't have what it takes. Mm-hmm. But then we think the solution is us, at the moment that we don't have what it takes, writing a perfect 12-step process that's going to get us from beginning, middle to end. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to do it.
Right.
But you do know how to get started.
Right.
Right? Like, you knew you wanted to do a podcast. You didn't, you went, okay, I got to probably learn how to use some equipment. Okay, I got to probably make a list of guests. Like, you just start, and now look, you're here doing it.
Here we go. So let's talk about like failure or mishaps that you've had on stage. I mean, you're a performer, right? So can you tell me about it? I mean, I know you've written about a few of them, but let's chuckle and go down that journey of some things that have happened on stage that weren't as planned.
there's a whole chapter in the book called Magical Mishaps.
It's a great chapter.
I'll give you some that are not in the book.
Oh, even better.
I don't do this very much anymore, but I learned when I was younger how to steal watches. And I mean, like, steal any watch, like, however the watch goes on, I can get it off. And so I practiced this for a long time. And so sometimes when I would do these corporate events, I would go around and greet everybody and, you know, just say, you know, looking forward to tonight, and then get up on stage and hand back a bunch of watches that I stole as I was just mingling. It was a super fun way to open the show.
Oh my gosh.
And it was during, this was probably 4 years ago, and it was during Christmas, and I was doing like a bunch of holiday Christmas parties. And you know when you get in like the routine of something, you're finally like, oh, I'm settled in. I'm kind of doing this.
Stealing,
you know,
watches. It's my time to
just
do that.
Not thinking about it. Like, because you did two or three shows, you know, the last couple of days. Well, I'm doing the show, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go greet some people. And man, I am cleaning up. Like, I think I took 6 or 7 watches that night as I'm walking around just shaking hands, and I'm like, oh, this is so good. And I got all these watches loaded in my pockets, and I'm like, this is going to be great. I'm going to walk on stage and I'm going to say, you know, I get to meet so many of you. In fact, I met someone who had a watch like this and this. I'm like, this is going to be so good. And then I realized, Taylor, you are about to perform for the Los Angeles Police Department Christmas party. Like, I didn't even realize I had just walked through a room of ununiformed police officers
and stole their watches
and robbed them blind.
This is amazing.
And as I'm walking on stage, I'm going, I really hope they think this is funny.
Oh, this is so good.
So bad. So bad. One time, this is not in the book either. One time we were doing a trick where my wife, at the time, we would, she's my wife now, but I mean, she used to be in the act. We would do like a big illusion show. And we're doing this routine that's like a version of sawing a person in half. And we do the routine and everything goes good. And she comes out of the box and she's holding one arm over her head and the other arm behind her back. And I'm like, that's kind of a weird way to stand. And I find out later that she had gotten cut inside the box and her arm was like bleeding.
Oh, because it's a real saw.
It's real. Yeah. Look. Yeah. Yeah. It's not. We don't do those tricks anymore.
All right, circling back to the police department. So did you take the watches?
Oh, yeah. No, I realized, I realized, like, it put two and two together, I am performing at the police department party after I had already stolen the watches.
And how did it go?
I just made a joke. I was just like, hey, I hope you guys think this is funny. And they all laughed and, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
It was all fun sport.
You
robbed
a bunch of cops.
One time I was at the Magic Castle and Katie was sitting in the audience. She just happened to be there the show. She wasn't performing with me. She was just watching the show and I stole a guy's watch. And when I used to do this routine, I would steal a watch and I like to wait as long as possible to give it back because then they don't even remember that I was near that person. You know what I'm saying? Like time delay thing. And so I stole this guy's watch pretty much right when I came out and said hi to people. And then I'm going to wait a little longer. I'm going to do another trick. I'll tell this story. I'll do this joke. Okay. And then before I knew it, the show was over. I said goodnight and I walked off stage and Katie was in the audience and knew that I had stolen this guy's watch and shoved it in my pocket. And she came running through and went, "You stole that guy." Because at this point, it's not the show anymore.
He's leaving.
He's gone. And I literally have stolen his watch. So I had to go find him at the bar and like say, "Hey, can I show you one more trick?"
Oh my gosh. That watch stealing. That's so funny. And that you could do it. You never got caught? No one ever caught you doing it?
I mean, every maybe like one out of 20 times someone, because what'll happen is certain watches, especially heavy watches, people get so used to what it feels like on their wrist that, you know, if you wait a little while, they start moving around and they're like, "Wait, something feels different," you know? But yeah, usually no.
Oh my gosh. I hope I'm wearing a watch when I see you. And so, I haven't worn a watch since I was like probably 9, but maybe I'll get one just in case, you know, we hang out. I used to have my grandfather, he passed away a while back, but I got his Rolex as like a hand-me-down.
What?
Yeah, it was cool. It's a nice Rolex. Now, what is not public knowledge is that it's no longer in the family. Had some financial hard times about 5 years ago and I sold it to pay the mortgage. I've never told that to anyone until right now. Swear to God.
I love it. What a glorious adventure.
My wife was like, "You're never going to wear this." And I was like,
"Yeah,
no." And she's like, "Call that jeweler friend of yours and see what it's worth." And it was gone.
Yeah.
Within 3 days, it was gone. And she would, and it was true. I'm not the kind of guy who would ever wear it. It's like, what am I going to just leave it in our safe for like 20 years?
So this guitar right here, right?
Yeah.
This is my Telecaster. This is the one guitar I saved because when I quit my job, I had a very nice guitar collection and it was literally every month going, "All right, what guitar am I going to sell to pay rent?" Every month I did that for about 3 or 4 months. But yeah, buddy, I love it. I love it. I love that you sold Grandpa's watch.
You know, it felt so criminal, but I think there's a lot of things in life that we can just let go. You know, it wasn't, I was never going to wear it. I was never going to just put it in a case. I'm not like a showy kind of person. And it's like, okay, I'm building my business, struggling, borrowing money from my wife's social work, you know, salary, very ashamed of that. Okay, I've got this Rolex. I'll sell it. We'll pay the mortgage. It was just a practical
thing.
And you know, I don't really regret it. I wouldn't have worn it.
What a better gift for Grandpa to leave you. A little peace of mind for that month.
A peace of mind for the month.
Maybe you're a little more present with the family because you're not so stressed.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a better gift than a watch you're not going to wear.
I can't believe I just admitted to that. Well, here we go. The secret is out.
Oh, this episode will never air now.
Oh, yeah. No, it will never air. All right. So the watch stealing, heard about that. Did you ever have like a trick that like you were trying to saw someone in half or something like that? Something on stage where all of a sudden you were like, "Oh shoot, like this didn't go well," or whatever, something like that.
Oh, so many times. So many times.
And you just had to bounce back, right? I mean, you just have to keep rolling. Like,
yeah, we had a prop where it was like an older prop, but a big prop. I mean, it was a big enough prop that you could have someone hiding inside that no one saw and it was still a big prop, you know? And so my wife is like hiding inside this prop. No one's supposed to know she's there. And my buddy's wheeling it out and I'm doing the intro for the routine. And he caught one of the wheels, got caught in part of the stage and it just snapped off. And so my wife is inside this box. No one knows she's in there. And now the box goes boom, and it kinks like this. And so it's like sliding off the thing. And my buddy is like dragging it now, you know, it's got three wheels instead of two, but it's got a person in it. And so he's just dragging it. And this is all happening behind me. I can kind of see it out of the corner of my eye. And everyone's like, "Oh," and I just went, for my next trick, and I just moved just on. You just gotta go with it.
That's so good. Okay, I got 40 questions left, so let's keep going.
No problem.
So good. Okay, so here's a question. How do you define success or a life well-lived? I know it's a big one.
Oh, wow. I like that I'm like, success, that's hard to define. You're like, let me make it easier. A life well-lived.
Yeah.
Wow. I think the simple answer for me would be presence and purpose. Like if I'm doing what I feel like I have a purpose to do on this planet, you know, for me, it's bring people joy and encouragement and inspire them usually through entertainment. If I'm doing that, that's great. That's a success regardless of, you know, money or accolades or anything. Like for me, it's, is it purposeful? And then the second thing is presence. Like, this is my big theme lately, man. I am just trying to remain present where I am, because especially as an entrepreneur and a business owner and, you know, someone who's trying to build things and create things, it's always this forward momentum. And it's like we started talking about at the beginning, you know, for me, real success is to be able to be here and be fully present with you. And in 20 minutes, be fully present on the couch with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That to me is the win. Because in my previous career, that's not what happened. Like I would go all day. I'd be gone all day at the office doing work, feeling like I never was doing enough. And then go home and feel like I was never there and never doing.
Because your mind's still on what you should be doing, what you could be doing, all that stuff, huh?
Yeah, it's like you're at work and you're constantly thinking about how you should be at home. And then you're at home thinking about you didn't get that thing done at the office. And so
captive.
For me, it's just like our buddy Bob says, be where your feet are, right? Like wherever your feet are, be there. It's 100%.
So it's such a simple, it's simple, but it's not easy.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not.
That's a wonderful answer. I love it. Okay, here's another one. What advice would you give to your 18-year-old self?
Oh my goodness.
Because now you're about 32, right? 33?
Oh, you're so kind. I'm 40.
You're 40.
And I've worked hard to look even older. Yeah, what would I say to my 18-year-old self? I don't know. It's tough, man. Because I want to say like, oh, I wouldn't have taken that 13-year career detour. But without that experience, we wouldn't have the marriage we have. I wouldn't be the husband I am. I wouldn't be the, you know what I mean? Like we would be different people.
Yeah.
So it's hard
married
to say,
young, right?
We married young. Yeah. You know, honestly, that might be my advice. I married at 21. I might tell my 18-year-old self to marry her quicker.
Wow. There you go. Married 18.
I swear, man. I mean, we were babies. All of our friends are like, you know, in their 30s and 40s and like, just starting to settle down. And I'm just like, man, I'm so glad. Like my whole adult life has been spent with Katie. Like we know each other better than you could ever know someone if you just met them, you know, in your 40s,
yeah,
which is great. Like do what you, but I'm just saying.
She let
like,
you cut her in half.
Yeah, that's.
That's intimacy
that's,
right there.
That's love.
I can't believe your wife is your assistant. That's so funny. Is she still your assistant?
Well, no.
Knock her out of that.
No. Yeah. Oh yeah, no, she, we got tired of that. I'll tell you what, man, I got tired of moving boxes and she got tired of climbing in them. And we were like, let's do something different.
That is so funny. So, I mean, that makes me think of like the prestige, you know, just all the,
yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Oh my goodness gracious. Can you levitate? Do you ever do that one?
We used to do it a lot, like a version of it where my wife would levitate. Yeah. I mean,
no big deal.
Probably like, well, I mean, not really. I can't really levitate. I can make it look like we're levitating.
Oh,
you know?
That's so great. I don't know how I went from, you know, wife to levitate, but it just came up.
Right.
You know, you got to ask a magician if they can levitate. Okay. Another question. If you could have a billboard that was up all over the world for 1 year, what would it say?
If I could have a billboard that was up for 1 year.
We can come back to
I don't know, man. That's a good question.
It's a tough question.
That's a really good question. I mean, I'm knowing me, it's probably going to be a joke. It'll be a practical joke. It'll be like a friend's phone number, or it'll be, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
it'll be something silly.
Here's a couple that I remember from other guests. One.
Yeah.
One was, you have permission. You can guess who said that one.
Oh, yeah. That's Bob.
And another one said,
see, that's so much better than me just
another one said, go to therapy. And so, you know, it's just so funny when people, you know, people's answers. And anyway, we can come back to that. You know, we can totally come back to that because that's a tough question. You know,
I love it. What would you put on a billboard? Hmm. I don't know.
It's okay.
I'd probably put Keep Chasing Wonder.
That's perfect. Keep Chasing Wonder.
That's kind of my motto for life.
That's good. I find wonder outside with like bugs and stuff. You know, that's where I often, like I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old and another one cooking. And like yesterday I was outside planting annuals because I'm like a gardener.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a landscaper professionally, but like I garden my own yard, of course.
Right.
And I was out drilling annuals, and like every time I'd find a roly-poly or a worm, I would throw it to my 2-year-old as if she's a puppy. And she would just play with them. And then she'd get so upset when they would like get in the grass and she'd ask for another worm. And the amount of time that she can spend with a worm or a roly-poly or, you know, a little gecko until she crushes it, you know, is just fascinating. And like right now we have a chrysalis of a giant swallowtail caterpillar that's in a Tupperware container on our fridge.
Oh,
now it's been in there for 3 weeks and we're wondering if it's ever going to emerge. But like every day we check it, we're like, is it going to hatch?
That's so cool.
That's just like bugs in the natural world is really where I come to life. And, it's like one of 18 areas, but then that's on my mind right now. So anyway, that's just something that I thought about. I love the natural world. When you get down close to the earth and the dirt, the stuff that's down there.
I'm telling you, it's crazy. I did an event with a group called Convoy of Hope that does food like service to millions of people around the world. Like they are just insanely, their whole thing is like, hey, there's a lot of big problems. None of them matter if people are starving. So like feed them first. And they do a great job at it. And one of the dudes that works with him, they call him Dr. Dirt because he has his PhD in soil. And he's just telling me all this stuff about soil and dirt. And I'm like, this is incredible.
It's so much more complicated, you know?
Yeah.
I remember learning the difference between dirt and soil per se. And dirt is basically like lifeless. And like, you know, there's not much going on, whereas soil has all the microbes and all the creatures, and it's usually darker.
There's like a whole universe under our feet.
Whole universe. There's like 60,000 species of nematode worms. Like what? It's just amazing. We could riff on this for hours. Okay. So let's see. Got a couple more questions. Can you name a few people who have really inspired you?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I can. Our buddy Bob Goff is like my first go-to. That dude, his before we ever were friends, like I just came across a book he wrote called Love Does. That book wrecked me because it showed me how to just live the way I talked about. Wouldn't it be cool if we lived this way? Like in my whole life, my job and my career were about like trying to get people to think like, what if we actually went out and did stuff? And Bob's just like, let me just do it. You don't have to talk about it.
Just going to do it.
Just go do it, you know? And so Bob's been huge in my life. My family, I'm grateful for my family. I've got really good family.
Your father, you talk about often in your book, you know, right? I mean, he was an inspiration to you, huh?
My dad is a fascinating guy. I mean, he's an incredibly hard worker. He's retired now. But he did like every job under the sun. I mean, he had like 2 or 3 jobs at any given time of my childhood, and yet was always just like fully present with us. Like, hey, you want to just go explore and play an adventure and, you know, look for something fun to do? He's a huge, huge inspiration. His presence is insane. Like his ability to just be happy. Like unconditionally happy.
That's a rare thing. You know, I feel like a lot of people, maybe a lot of our listeners are possibly wounded by a father who wasn't present, either physically or mentally, or, you know, it seems as if it's a common theme of a father who's just not there or who's just not engaged with you. And so it's great that you had a father that's like that. My father's like that as well. And I'm very thankful, but I realize more and more as I get older, it's a rare thing. And it's also a calling to be that way, to be those kind of fathers. to our kids.
Yeah.
You know?
And it, yeah. And it's a good reminder, like you said, when you see people doing that, I mean, it gives you hope because, you know, we, a lot of friends from, I mean, our family was a blended family. My parents split when I was little, but like my parents figured out a way in the midst of all of their disagreements to get along with each other. And I think it's just such a good reminder that like things don't have to go, even if things don't work out perfectly, doesn't mean they have to go the way they tend to go for people, you know?
Yeah.
We get to choose how we are and who we're going to be.
100%. We get to choose. Okay, final question. Can you tell me about a few books that have helped you out along the way? You mentioned Love Does. Any others that our readers?
Gosh.
And obviously, I mean, our readers are going to definitely read Road to Wonder. But tell me another book that's really, you know, that's yours. So tell me one or two books that have really moved you, moved the needle for you.
Hmm. Oh my gosh, I spend a lot of time reading books about performers. I think. The world in which I kind of spend my time is so weird and unique that I really am drawn to that. So like one of my favorite books ever is Born Standing Up by Steve Martin. And it's basically the story of his life up until he became famous. And it's absolutely fascinating.
Born Standing Up.
Yep. That's a great book. I love The War of Art. If anyone's just wanting like some encouragement, like you've got these things that you've talked about wanting to do and you're like, okay, what if I actually do them? That book's a good, like, kick in the pants. Like, go on, move, like, do it, you know, start doing something.
Perfect.
This book I'm super excited about. No one can get this, which is why I'm excited about it. It's called The Life and Mysteries of the Celebrated Dr. Q. There was a magician back, let's see if it'll focus. There was a magician back in the early 1900s named Alexander, and he wrote this book. He didn't want anyone to think that he wasn't like a real psychic mentalist guy. He was doing like mind reading magic show stuff back in the early 1900s. And so he created this character called the Life and Mysteries of the Celebrated Dr. Q. He said, this is how this guy's show worked, but he was explaining his entire performance. So this book explains every trick he did with diagrams and like photos of like how he did his stuff back in like the early 1900s.
I can't believe he gives away his secrets.
Yeah. But he sold it under a pseudonym because he didn't want anyone to think that it was really him.
Right.
And this is the coolest part. Are you ready?
Ready.
It's signed by him.
Whoa, that's amazing.
So I was reading a book about him. I was reading another book about this guy's life, and it was fascinating to me. And they mentioned this little book that he wrote and would sell. And I Googled it and found it on eBay. And I was like, there's no way that's it. And then I opened it up. And in the book, the other book I read, I'm totally nerding out. No one, we've lost all the listeners now.
It's cool.
Yeah, he signed his in a green pen. So that was a big deal.
That's a huge deal. This is awesome. Well, we got a little esoteric there, and I like it. Look, we're talking about things that really matter to you, you know?
That matter to me and absolutely no one else.
Well, that's, you know, if this one person's still listening, then they love this, and they're going to become a magician. So, well, Taylor, this has been so great. I really appreciate you spending some time with me. I feel like you and I get along really well.
And I know, man. We gotta have an adventure together.
Yes, yes. I'd like to make it to your neck of the woods because Louisiana is just not nearly as interesting as Southern California. I need to make it out to the Oaks. I need to come see Bob's horses and hang out and do whatever we do. So
you've got my number. You got to let me know when this is happening. Let's make it happen. And we'll go explore. We'll go play. We'll have some fun.
We will make it happen. So as far as Taylor, you can find him on all the social stuff. Is it Magic Storyteller? That's your handle, correct?
That's my handle. Magic Storyteller on Instagram. It's I'm Taylor Hughes on Twitter. But yeah, Instagram's where I usually post stuff.
Wonderful.
I've got a really cool mailing list that I, you know, send stuff out every now and then. If they want to join that, they can just text Taylor to 44144. And they'll get a video that'll teach them like four magic tricks.
That is so cool. And of course, Road to Wonder, check it out now. It is out. And you're currently recording the audio version. So by the time this comes out, the audio may be ready too.
Audiobook will be out very soon.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Guys and gals, I hope you enjoyed listening in on my conversation with Taylor Hughes. He has a magic chest full of wisdom and insights to help us live with more joy, meaning, and wonder. Taylor can help us to embrace ambiguity and realize that perhaps we don't have as much control or certainty as we think, and maybe we just don't need it. It's a beautiful thing to realize that we don't have all the answers.
To learn more about Taylor, check out his new book, The Road to Wonder, as well as his website, taylorhughes.com. On Instagram, you can find him under the handle of Magic Storyteller. All right, y'all. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Adventure Cure. Until next time, much love from your host, Rob Trependahl.